Hey, welcome to the new CNADHD podcast. I'm your host, Liz Lewis, and I don't want to produce another boring podcast.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you go in iTunes, there are like 100 podcasts now about ADHD. Seriously, do it. Look, you'll be shocked. And I don't want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. The CNADHD podcast is your place to get the best information and hear from the best experts in the field of ADHD. I take all this information and I make it understandable, actionable, and hopefully a little fun. It does not suck.
My guest today is the multi-talented Rick Green, who is here to discuss all things ADHD and emotions. I think you're really going to like this conversation. I really, really enjoyed it. Rick is so insightful and so funny. Listen to the whole thing from beginning to end. I promise you're going to love it. This is episode 311 of CNADHD.
So I have Rick Green with me today, which is a huge privilege, and it's been a goal of mine for a while. Little did I know that if I just sent an email, you were so nice.
Well, you know, I have to be, because everybody with ADHD is very emotional. If I say the wrong thing, everybody will get upset, including myself, you know.
That's a good point.
What was I thinking?
Yeah, that's a good point. But you know, part of the emotional issues that I have around my ADHD is, well, maybe it's what they would call imposter syndrome, where even though I've spent so much time and energy and money and, you know, researching, I still feel like it's hard for me to reach out to experts in my field because I just feel somehow like I'm going to get rejected. I don't know.
Yeah, and you may buy some, and that's okay because they're busy. You know, doctors are running clinics, seeing patients, or doing research, so they're busy. And you know, and I'm sure they get. Well, we get a lot of requests. Can't really, you know, I get much as I'd like to, and I, you know, I've done talks at every level from grade three all the way up to you know, gatherings of doctors. And nurse, and you know, registered nurse practitioners. So yeah, I think there's a real warmth in the community. Terry Matlin talks about that, and Linda Rogley and Kate Kelly and Peggy Raimondo in their book talk about just everybody at the conference. Just here's the shirt off my back, basically. So I think I think we're so. And this can get into about the emotional thing. We are so beaten down and worn out, and to find out we're not alone, to find out somebody else has got this is just, it's eye-watering. It's at the start. It's like, oh, and it's existential because you suddenly have this, you have to rethink who you are. And that gets into then everybody around you has to rethink who you are, and people don't want to do that. There's a, what's it called, a family homeostasis. And when I asked a doctor to explain that in one of the videos, he said, well, when you go to your parents' house for dinner, which chair do you sit in at the table? The one you sat in as a child, right? I sit across from Andy beside Mike. You know, that's where I would, if now the house is gone and so on. But yeah, when we came back from university, we took our seats.
Yep. So, yeah. Well, we're going to discuss that today. We're going to talk about the emotional tornado from the diagnosis process sort of through the stages, because I do feel like it's a journey.
Yes.
And there are some stages to the whole situation.
Yeah. And the stages don't come in any order. You know, they're kind of, if you know anything about the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross stages of grief, that you go through when someone dies. And in this case, I suppose you could say the person dying is the old you, or the view of you that you had. And in some ways, the view of who, this is good, I'm glad we're recording this, the view of who you have of yourself dictates your life. So you said you were afraid to reach out to me, the imposter, so that you didn't. So that you're, you know, what's that phrase that Henry Ford said? If you believe you can do a thing or you don't, you're right. And, you know, when we started making ADD and Loving It, the documentary that went on PBS and then built the website, the Totally ADD website, we had no idea what we were doing. I'm a comedian, a writer, a television writer, producer, actor, director, all these, those things I could do. But when their reaction to the documentary was, oh my God, you know, can you come to my house? Have you been watching my life? Or literally one guy had bought pills to end his life and happened to catch the program and said, I flushed the pills down the toilet. He said, I was working on my fourth bankruptcy and third divorce, and I decided I was out of here, and I happened to catch your program. He'd arranged it so that the day after all the paperwork was done, he would kill himself. And instead, he went to his doctor, and he said something like, I got some much better pills, and it's been a week, and everything's changed. And so, I mean, you know what it's like, and anyone out there who's been through it themselves, as we're talking about here, that the emotion that's involved, and until you know, this is why my mission was to get people to know, because I saw how much struggle I had before that was unnecessary. I mean, life is full of struggle. Everybody you love is going to die, and if you die first, then they're going to grieve you, you know. So we're all going through stuff all the time. There isn't a family that's a television, well, depends what show you're talking about. If it's Game of Thrones, there's probably some families like that. But yeah.
Well, and I think I've only been creating content about ADHD for about not quite 4 years yet. One of the things I'm noticing is, first of all, just getting the diagnosis. That is the first hurdle. A lot of people, they'll watch your videos maybe, you know, or they'll be on Attitude website and they'll be reading all these things. And I'm sure you get the emails too. I'm pretty sure I have ADHD.
Oh, all the time, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I have ADHD, but I'm struggling to find a doctor in my area. Or the first doctor I went to was cash only and I had to pay $4,000.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually hearing a lot now that sometimes they are going around insurance and telling people, we'll do a full neuropsychological workup on you, but it's going to be $4,500 to do it.
Wow.
And that's a barrier.
That's madness. You know, I know a doctor, and I won't say his name, but because he's busy, but he charges like $300. You know, it's now he's been at it a while, and as a number of doctors will tell you, and I think people with ADHD, we can spot each other. He's not glib about it. He's really careful, very professional, but he knows how to very quickly get to the core symptoms. And yeah, so you've got all these people who are, well, you only have to look at the comments on the free videos that are on the Totally ADD site. Ooh, I'm doing promotion. That's great. My wife will be happy.
I have to say, Rick's library. I just tweeted about it the other day, and I never tweet. I just want to do it for fun. Rick has over 100 videos for free on the website, and I think that's extraordinary because there aren't a lot of places where you can go to get good information, high quality information for free. That's all. Off the soapbox. I'm done.
Yeah. Well, and what's nice about the material is some of it's me talking after interviewing 70 doctors. And a lot of it is the 70 doctors, registered nurse practitioners, authors, people who've been at it for a lot longer than you or even I. And I've been at it now 19 years since I was diagnosed. Although the program was a decade ago. So ADD and Loving It first aired. I'm losing track of what we were talking about here. It was really good too.
Getting a diagnosis. How hard? Okay.
Yeah, it is. And then ADD and Loving It, the first thing we did was my video so that people would go, this is me. Like that was it. And the book that I co-authored, ADD Stole My Car Keys, it's the same thing. People come to talks, they're dragged there, they're sitting there, and then they're sort of mortified and staring, and then they're somebody in the family's nudging them and they're going, shut up. They're just locked in and they come up afterwards. And then they write and say, I read the book and it's, you know, 155 signs and symptoms. And the neurology is interesting. And the research and the genes that they've identified, there's over 20 now that have been identified as being potential, like you don't have to maul and you probably won't. But all of that is great, but it's how it shows up in your life. It's right. That's the issue and how it's affecting you. And everyone talks about clutter and being late and so on. But if you're knocked flat by your emotions, you're not doing anything about it. And that's the tragedy to me is that Well, Alan Brown from Crusher ADD talked about, went to his doctor and said, went to a meeting, I think, or went to his doctor and said, I think I have this. And his doctor said, nah, that's little boys. You're fine. You know, you're fine. Just do more exercise, do more crossword puzzles or something like that. And so he suffered for 4 more years, and he talks openly about his addiction issues and all of that. So it's one thing to not know. It's to suspect and be afraid to look, or to have, and this is what that video that we did is about people dismissing your ADHD or you finally finding it out. And it is a real crisis for some people, not all. You know, you've seen the one video on the emotional tornado. What? Do you like the opening, by the way, with the tornado effect?
I do like your videos. They're like I always say, it's enough information that you feel like you learned something, but it's not overwhelming. And there's some, I don't know, lightheartedness thrown in that is so important.
Well, I'm a comedian, right? So it's got to be, because I don't watch stuff either unless it's got some wit to it. But yeah, I mean, so the stages, what are they? They start with denial, which is where most people are. So ADD and loving it gets them past that. But then comes...
I was going to say, how do you see it happen? I mean, I know what I see in women. I know what I see in women. I'm assuming it might be very similar for men. But yes, denial. That's the first thing that comes up, whether it's your own sort of denial or it's the denial of the medical professionals around you when you first bring it up. You get shut down. But there's just denial, like the river of denial. You should have put that in the video.
The Nile River. Yeah, and it's a wide river that flows. It's you've got to be Moses parting the sea to get across it. And it is overwhelming. And, you know, what is the percentage? The statistic I heard, this is 3 or 4 years ago, was that 85% of adults are undiagnosed. You know, and when I give a talk, I say, look, among kids, it's well diagnosed. It's overdiagnosed in some places. You get 11% of kids, and they get 11% of kids have been diagnosed. Now, a diagnosis apparently can be someone just saying that kid has ADHD, whereas it could be, you know, a divorce in the family, or they're moved, or he's being bullied, or there's a situation in the home that nobody knows about, and that's why that boy or girl is acting up that way or not acting up, not doing anything. But anyway, so yeah, the denial stops people from looking into it, and that's the unnecessary suffering. You've got to make it safe for people, because people think, does this mean I'm crazy? And what's one of the very first book written about adult ADHD is not Driven to Distraction. It's You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Stupid, or Crazy by Kate Kelly and Peggy Raimondo. And that's the thing that I think registers for people when they finally get, when they're willing to look. Because until you get past denial, you can't go through the other stages. And then the problem with the next stage is, what else is it? So there's denial, and they're not in any particular order. There's anger.
Uh-huh. Relief.
Relief. Relief is kind of towards the end, but it can be quick. Like Terry Matlin, who you know well, Terry, when we interviewed her, and I think she's in the video, she says that there was no anger for her. Now, she's kind of laid back and cool. She and I did a duet at one of the conferences together. She's a good guitar player, and I'm a terrible singer. But it got laughs. Anyway, we see I'm diverging here.
It's okay.
There's a lesson in here, because someone who's in denial will go, yeah, that looks like me or my husband or whoever. The anger of why didn't I know sooner? Why didn't someone tell me? And then there's the other anger, which is everyone told me and I refused to believe it. And then you got to go back and either apologize and acknowledge, or what happens is you just kind of, they come around slowly. And eventually one day I was diagnosed too. And then they're your best friend and they're your ally. And we're in this fight together, you know, brothers, we're part of the tribe. And you got to be careful not to get smug about it.
I was going to say, there's good and bad to that tribalism, right?
Yep.
I've seen, especially in large groups, which everyone that listens to my podcast knows that I have a thing against like big, huge Facebook groups. There is a strange groupthink sort of anger that boils sometimes when you put a bunch of ADHDers together that feel misunderstood. And I've seen it on other social media too, where someone will post, you know, about something and then they'll put, screw all those people that said this about me or that about me and da 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 da. And then everybody starts chiming in. That the anger thing can get a little scary, I think. I get scared when I start to see people exchanging angry, not at each other, but just, you know, yeah, screw that person, screw those people, screw, you know, and I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah. But I think we're living in a very angry time. You know, people are not voting for things, they're voting against things.
True.
You know, I keep coming back to John Kennedy, who was, you know, said this, who offered this vision of, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And he created the Peace Corps, and he created, you know, he said, let's get to the moon. We choose to go, not because it's hard or because it's easy, but because it's hard. Like, we're rising together, and that seems to be disappearing, and it's factional and so on. And it's not just, you know, in North America, it's elsewhere too. That's on the rise. So there's anger. And the anger, the thing when you have anger in groups, that's where a trained professional can just be compassionate and not get hooked. And the best thing you can do is, you know, the training, little training I've had in watching therapists and going to a therapist is just acknowledge, yeah, you're right, they're monsters or jerks or idiots. It's like, I get how much this hurt you. I get how angry you are. Because anger... this is another really interesting fact. Anger is just sadness turned outwards.
Mm.
So one of the signs, if you're in deep depression, one of the good step, the next step up is anger. And that's actually a good thing. It's because it's got more energy to it. Whereas just sadness, deep depression has no energy. It's like, you know, as somebody once said, here's a pill that can cure your, there's a pill there that can cure your depression. Yeah, but it's right across the table. Like, that's, you know, you just can't even imagine. So the anger, you want to move past it. And I think all of these stages, you want to move past them, and you will. Hopefully you move past denial before you're 80, and then you're left with regret, which is another huge one. And that for me, so I was 47 at the time I was diagnosed, or 46, whatever it was. And this is the most common phrase, if only I'd known sooner. You'll find that in our forums, all kinds of comments about that, if only I'd known sooner. And then the self-flagellation about, I'm an idiot, da, da, da. And that's another way of delaying moving forward, is to just beat up on yourself. But it's hard not to, because we've been trained to do that, because the world has told us we're idiots. Or we can't, why can't you do this? Everyone else can. Your brothers don't have, your sister's fine. Yeah, so those stages, and the video that we did really deals with, I play the guy getting the diagnosis, and a friend who's a frequent supporter on the website, she played the doctor giving me the prescription. She's wonderful. She does cartoon voices and stuff as well. But there is that tornado that comes up, and there's a quote, I think it's in there. Did I do the quote about Winston Churchill, which is... somebody asked Winston Churchill, what do you do if you're going through hell? And he said, keep going.
Yes.
And I love that, because it's like, this is awful. You know, yeah, right now it is. My father was in combat and in World War II, and I've read about the fight that he was in at this particular spot in Italy, and it was nasty. Like, he's lucky to come out of it alive, and there's a good description of it. And that for those 6 hours that they were basically fighting hand to hand and up close, it was awful. And yet he came back and you know, got married and had kids and had a great life.
I know you sort of already said this.
Yes.
What do you think people should do when they first get that diagnosis and they're working through these stages and they're sort of stumbling between the stages all at once, and it's sort of a tornado? What do you think the steps are that people should take?
Well, one is to, if you can afford it, get to a therapist and start working through it. Another is, I think is really powerful, is CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is, you can do on your own. And where's the book? Do I have it here? It's called Feeling Good. Here it is. Right here.
I have that.
Dr. David, it may be backwards. Dr. David Burns, this is the book's 40 years old. There's all kinds of new research. And in fact, a couple of the top ADHD experts who are in the videos, Anthony Rothstein and Russ Ramsey, they're at University of Pennsylvania.
And they have an excellent book. Now, it's more geared toward clinicians, but I'm very science nerdy, so I read it myself. The book that Anthony Rothstein and Russell Ramsey wrote, I think it's called Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Adult ADHD. It's orange on the front. That is another excellent resource. I know that not everybody could read through the whole thing, but the way they talk about ADHD and how they apply cognitive behavioral therapy in their clinic to ADHD is fascinating. And they make some really salient, like, good points about just basic things, time management even.
Yeah, and in fact, so I have my notes here. No, I don't have my book. So what's nice about this is you can do this at home. You do it yourself. It explains the 10 different cognitive distortions. So if you and if one of us had been late for this, we'd be going, I'm an idiot. I mean, God, this is, I can't even do this. And you'd be saying, I should never have approached him. This, he must be mad at me. And I'd be thinking, oh God, I've been at this 19 years. I should have understand how this works. Like, we come up with all kinds of stuff. It's like, what this allows you to do is to go, is to give you a list and say, well, I've actually marked them. Which of these cognitive distortions, is it all or nothing thinking? Overgeneralization? Is it a mental filter? You pick out a single negative detail and dwell on it excessively. So on. There's many, but these are the top 10. And what you do is you write it out. I'm an idiot. Liz was waiting. I should have da-da-da-da. This is what I get for whatever. It serves me right. Then you start going through the list and you go, okay, that's all or nothing thinking. Of course, you'll want to talk to me again later. Da-da-da-da. That's really what I love about that is you realize it's almost like if you're in a parking lot or a gas station watching someone screaming about the price of gas as they're pumping up their car, and that's like, well, maybe, you shouldn't have a big SUV. That's, or you'd be driving a vehicle that big if you're so concerned or whatever it is. Like, or you'll be able to get, to be kind to yourself, and that's what I like. Sorry, and I'm going to say, and the other thing that we talk about in ADD and Mastering It, which was the second PBS special, Patrick talks about journaling, and that's a really great, when my first marriage ended, I was writing, and I found it probably 5-10 years afterwards, and I'm reading through my fears and my doubts, and I was pouring it out, like drama king, right? And I was sitting here, I threw it out because I was like, oh my God, this is just, kids are fine. Yeah, there was some upset there, but we went to France together. We've done this. The kids come over. They treat my wife like one of the family. And she, it worked out. But at the time, and this is the problem with ADHD, we're so quick to react, which can be great. That's why we do well in things like the military or show business or whatever. We're quick. Or we can be, not everyone, but we can be that. The problem is we're also, or we feel things so deeply, and that's the problem.
I'm so glad that you're talking about this, because I just put out, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, I just put out a post. I did a bunch of research on self-talk. And first of all, the ADHD brain, we're not well set up. We are not well wired for productive self-talk. And I feel like for non-ADHDers, it comes a little more easily, but we have these cognitive distortions. And I have a whole post. I don't call them cognitive distortions in the post. I think I use that phrasing in the post, but not in the title. And it's all about the cognitive distortions. And I have been talking nonstop, probably annoying people, about journaling, writing things down for perspective, and reading it out loud or saying it out loud. Because based on the research I did, and Rothstein and Ramsey talk about this, the externalizing of it puts a psychological distance there that you need. Whether that means you're going to write it or you're going to say it out loud, you need some psychological distance because we don't have the wiring to do it all up in our head.
No. And I remember being in a course many years ago, a wonderful course, and they had us do an exercise. They said, write out a trauma, the biggest trauma from your life, a big trauma, that a big wrong that was done to you, a big thing that burns, and it went on, and they were very, you know, and they said, dress it up, make it as dramatic and profound as you want. And so you had 20 minutes and you wrote it out. So I wrote out, you know, how I'd been treated by a business, somebody I've worked with in a show, and they said, okay, turn to a person, find a partner, you're going to read yours through. And you're just going to, and when you get to the end, read it aloud, start over and read it again and keep reading it from top to bottom until it no longer, until you're fine, until it, I've forgotten the wording they used. So I started it and I'm reading away and I'm going through this thing. And by the second or third time through, I'm going, well, on the other hand, I did get this out of it. I think these thoughts are coming. And eventually it's just like, yeah, anyway. And I ended up working with the guy again on some projects. So, but it was just, it all came out, but all I could see was the negative. And it was like, well, we had fun and he didn't have a lot of money to pay me. And, you know, we were, and it was a great opportunity and it boosted my growth, whatever. The guy I was working with started talking about coming out of the closet about his homosexuality. And he's reading this thing and about the reaction from his parents. And he's just, and he goes all the way through it and he starts again at the top and he goes through it and he goes through it. And about the fourth or fifth time, and at this point, most people are out of the room. Like there were 150 people probably in the room and most are playing. There's like 20 of us left and this guy's going through it. And then they said, and I was, and they just, oh God, I'm sick of it. And he threw it down the ground. It was just like, I'm done. And it was the same with me. Like I was just, yeah. That I was stuck in that story. And but when you hear it, hearing it aloud, that's why therapy works, because you get to hear it. I joke in my one-man show, I joke about my going to see my therapist. I say it always starts with him asking, how have you been? And then I talk. And then 50 minutes later, he says, all right, your time's up. And, or he gives me a pithy, at some point, I would go on and on. He's, and I've given him permission to interrupt me and stop me, and he does. But I'll, and I stop myself now frequently and go, well, and he takes, he's ADHD, he takes medication for it, and he stops and he takes a drink. And these are all strategies, I think. And then he said, after 20 seconds or 30 seconds, and he'll say something and I'll just be like either, oh God, right. Or I'll start crying or I'll be laughing, you know, whatever. And it's just like, oh. And the analogy I use with people, because nobody wants to go to therapy, or a lot of people don't want to go. Some people who've done it love it.
I have a lot of people that tell me either they aren't comfortable with it or their spouse is like, no, we're not going to couples counseling.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't drag someone to couples counseling unless they, you know, they want to. But it, there is that, you know, what I've often said to people is the thing that a therapist could see, a therapist is trained in how our brains work. And, you know, the eight therapists who understand ADHD are trained in how our brains work or don't work well and what we do. But I said, you could probably look around at all your high school friends or every member of your family, and you could go, she worries way too much. She doesn't worry enough. She's crazy. She's got to see. This person needs to do that. They got, and you can see this person has no idea how rude they are when they, how they come across. This guy here is, it comes across as so arrogant. They can't see it. You can. And you just, we sit there and I mean, I've done it. And you go, ding, ding, here's what's wrong with you and you and you and you. I can't see. I'm fine. It's only in either doing some deep examination, but what a therapist can go is go, maybe you worry too much. Maybe that comes across as arrogant, maybe, or whatever. They may not even confront you with it that way. They'll find better ways to do it. But
it's a perspective that
it is,
you know, and you can't do that on your own all the time.
No. And the cognitive behavior, the journaling helps. And it's not just a matter of writing it out. It's reading it again and reading aloud. You're right. Is a terrific thing. You also want to get, I think, you know, you're asking about how to deal with all these. Did we deal with all of them? So there's denial.
Guilt yet?
Guilt. Yeah, the guilt is, especially if you're a parent, right, that I handed this to them, or I wish we'd known sooner, or I was the one who was, you know, a common one is everybody around us recommended we try medication, or the, and we just bought it tooth and nail. We took sugar out of his diet and all these other things, and we gave him kelp. And then we tried medication, and suddenly he has friends, and, you know, or she's passing and she's happy and so on. She's a little grumpy when it wears off, or she's very grumpy and, you know, whatever. But so there's a lot of, there's huge amount of guilt, and it is scary. I think it's a bit too, like, almost all if you try medication, there comes a point where you very quickly, you want to get off it at some point. And most people do, you know, they use it sporadically. Tony Rothstein says they use it like an inhaler. I think that was, you know, when I need it. And like, I haven't taken mine in a couple of weeks. You know, that maybe one day I thought, yeah, I'm going to need to focus. There's a lot of small things to be done. Otherwise, I just have a couple of coffees.
Well, and the medication piece, honestly, that deserves, you have a set of videos about medication, don't you?
Yeah, well, it was the number one topic in the forums was medication. And the only time really we got stuff where we had to remove it was someone trying to sell steroids medications.
Oh,
and, you know, one of those things going on. Mostly the forums are just people sharing stuff. And there's so much in there now. But anyway, yeah, the medication. So what happened is finally I had all these conversations. I talked to 65 experts, and a lot of them had talked about medication. So we put together a video. I thought I'll make one video. It turned into 5 videos.
Okay.
It's huge. But it's what I liked about it is it's, again, I think this is true of all the videos that we've done. The free ones that are on the website or on YouTube, and the ones that are in the shop, the hour-long ones and whatever they are, is they come from, I wish I'd known that. What is it I wish I'd known? And so the medication one, it's 5 videos, but it's really just 99 short films about medication. Here's the question. What about this? When do I take it? What are the side effects? You know, and the last video, the last of the 5 basically says, look, here's the role of medication. The role is to give you, you know, the role of this is not to, you just take it and then suddenly you're able to do everything. It's that you're doing everything. It's that it allows you now to put in the pause to think things through and so on. You may still choose to spend all morning making toast. You know, it's at some point you've got to get involved, but you can now spend.
And I think that's a big, for people, that's a big hurdle too. You know, once you've gotten, you have this whole jumble of emotions that's happening.
Yes. Yeah. Let's come back to that.
Yeah. You have this whole jumble of emotions that's happening. You may or may not have access to therapists to talk to therapy, to have these conversations or tools for yourself. And then you may or may not be able to work really closely with the physician, maybe try some different types of medication. When you get to that point, like, you have to start, I'm assuming at some point you would want to start telling the people in your life.
Right.
And that's another thing that I get a lot of emails about. And even people I know very well within my community, we have these conversations about our spouses and partners and aunts and uncles and grandparents. And it's amazing how awkward that is for people and the emotions that that brings up, having to, it is a change in your identity. You know, you probably shouldn't do it on Christmas Eve, you know,
no.
Announce to your family, oh, I was diagnosed with ADHD. But how do you do that? I mean.
So, yeah, it's a good question. And I think it's true for everyone of disclosing, who do you tell? We have a video about disclosing. And there's actually another one about called Facing the World, about dealing with people, you know, the reaction of people. And in fact, my reaction was to the point where I decided I'm going to make a documentary about this and shut everybody up. And it did. People got it because it's on television. And there were 9 experts in the video. And Patrick McKenna, my friend, the comedian, and his wife, he got the official diagnosis. He knew because his son, you know, had been, he'd looked at his family tree. He'd looked at the roots and he'd looked up into the fruit of his loins, if you will, in the tree. And he went, yeah. So we were pretty darn sure. And he got diagnosed during the making of the documentary. So yeah, the disclosing is a big one. You know, the both videos, the Facing the World and the other, have some really good strategies. The one thing that I will say is don't rush telling. As somebody in the video says, it's kind of all the king's horses and all the king's men are, you know, it's like throwing stones through a window. It's easy to do and then try putting it back again. Once people know, you got to be really choosy about it. And you're so, you know, we talk about relief and enthusiasm, which Dr. Halliwell talks about. At some point, you move past these stages into enthusiasm and hope about the future as things start to improve. And they don't improve evenly, and you mess up, and then you think, I'm an idiot, and you're nothing matters, and or nothing works. That's another classic thing that I think we all do at points. Well, I think that's human.
I've known I had ADHD since 1991. I still have to go through all of these emotions periodically. Because yeah. Even though I had access to great treatment, you know, I still have days when I'm like, none of this is working. My work is for nothing. My life is for nothing. I'm a terrible parent. I gave it to my son. Like, yes. So yeah. It's an ongoing thing.
Well, if it helps, I can tell you, you are a terrible parent. And self-helping.
I mean, but you know what? You know what, though? I fear the world is going to screw up. You know, the world is tough enough. My kid's going to have his own issues. Yeah. I'm trying really hard not to add to that. Which is why I treat the ADHD. Because I feel like if I don't treat my issues, then I'm more likely to push some of it off onto him.
Yeah. So the emotional stuff is so crucial. You know, there's also a video on it. If you have somebody who's full of this explosive anger and then they're fine, there's a video about that, because that's ADHD thing again, common. And it ties into that reaction of, you know, those days where even though you know better, you forget everything. And it's like, I'm a bad mother. I'm an idiot. My life means nothing. I've failed. I'll never be like him or her or whatever. And you never think, well, maybe you will be as good as, or maybe you'll be better in some other way. And you know, they're already being them. You don't need to be them as well, but you don't have that pause. And David Gawork, the coach, he has a book. I have it somewhere here called
I've seen
Permission, Permission to Proceed. And he talks about that, that putting in that pause. And that's part of what you want to be able to develop. And that's talked about in all of the videos that we have on emotions, is being able to pause. That's the difference. And for me, so doing yoga and mindful meditation and exercise, and regularly when I get stuck, journaling or writing it out, pouring it out, those things allow me to build that pause. Mindfulness is such a great tool for that. It's kind of and there's a wonderful video about that on the website in the shop. Mindfulness is, the evidence is it's as good as medication. And the first studies that were done showed it was actually rewiring the brain. And it's nice because you can do it for 30 seconds while you're cutting carrots, and you could do it for 10 minutes while you're driving or while you're in a conversation, or you could just sit alone and look out the window, and just notice. It's not that search for nirvana. There's nothing religious about it, because it's, you know, contemplation, whichever, or prayer or whatever, silence, which, you know, I think probably almost every faith has that anyway, but it is just a calming of the brain, and it's dramatic what it can do to your brain practicing. And so the thing with all these emotions, to wrap it up, maybe for now, we can talk more about dealing with the crap from other people, how to deal, because I have some wonderful strategies for that and how to take on, and they're in that video, Facing the World. But basically, you know, the emotions can derail you. They're natural. And I think the other thing that I would say about them is, and this ties in exactly, I guess, with what you're talking about and you're pointing to, it's never going to end. 1991, that's like 20, 30 years. That's a long time. So you were two at the time, obviously.
Yeah.
And,
I was 11.
11. Okay.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's like at that point, it's still going to come back. And it's, the question is not, can you ever make it stop? It's kind of like mindfulness. You can never shut off the chatter in your head, but you can just turn the volume way down. And if something awful happens, like, thanks for sharing, but here's what I'm about. I'm about trusting people or whatever it is. So that's never going to go away. The difference is you get better at bouncing back or cutting it off or noticing, you know, so that, you know, you're not in a physical fight, you know, that reaction and the fight or flight. And then you go, well, this is stupid because he's drunk and there's nine of them. And there's nine of me. Why am I arguing with this drunk? Whatever it is, like, you've got this. So it's the same thing. You're now arguing with this brain in your head and you believing this voice that you're, what they call it, the monkey mind, the chatter that's going on. You're busy listening to it, thinking it's you talking to you. It's not you. It's this voice, which is good to have. You know, it was good for, in most of human evolution, for someone to go, that's a snake. No, it's a snake. Because sometimes it was a snake. And the people who survived were the people whose brain went, snake, snake, right? Food, fruit. And the people who didn't survive were, probably a stick. Oh, no, it was a snake, and I've been poisoned. So it's a really handy tool for certain things. But, you know, when you've been told you're being laid off or whatever, it's like, it's not the same as a dragon or a snake or a velociraptor coming at you. It's, and then with, you know, a day later, it might be, you know what, I hated that job. And my cousin was saying we wanted, they're looking for somebody, whatever, right? It's, so that comes with age, you know, being a little older than you. Well, pretty well older than anybody, I believe, now on the planet.
I might be older than you think, though.
Oh, I was born in.
If I told you I was 11 in 1991, then you can figure out how old I am.
Yeah, I got a daughter who was born in 1985, so it's not that. So, no, I'm older. Although the hair was going way earlier. Anyway, yeah. So that the it's always going to come up. The trick is to just be faster at catching it and not letting it ruin your relationship or have another fight that you don't need to. And my wife and I are both getting way better at that. Just, you know, getting activated, because I do stuff that activates. I got ADHD. I forget. I, you know, don't put things away or whatever still. And then she'll remind me of things that I do remember. It's like, that's the dish towel. I know. And then it's like, she's being nice. She's offering whatever. So there's, anyway, so the nice thing about the emotional stuff is that that is one that can change as you journal it out, as you write it out, as you talk it out, once you've poured it all out in writing, then you can sit down and start writing out what you want your life to be. Who am I really? You know, what am I about? And you can, and that's a really fun exercise. And, you know, for me, it's about getting people in. It's about curiosity and joy and wonder, and joy, wonder, and curiosity are kind of my three things, you know?
Yeah. And I think I totally agree with what you're saying. And I think, you know, first of all, just your awareness. Once you get that diagnosis, your awareness of what's going on, it answers a lot of questions. You're going to have to go through all of these things and work through it. And it could be something you, depending on your personality type, maybe you'll work through some things really quickly, or maybe this will take you, you know, years to work through, and it's ongoing. It's always going to be a thing. The tools that are at your disposal are, you know, talking to doctors about medication, therapy, which we talked about a lot, social support. You have a community for social support, right?
Yep. And we have people who wanted more. Like, so we've made all these videos. We can't afford to keep doing it. So we started something called Patreon, which is people could support us now. And we have like, I don't know, 100 and something people who are supporting us every month. And I'd love more people to do that, because as we get more and more viewers, more and more patrons, it's allowing us to shoot videos and edit them, because I can't. I have to hire an editor. And it eventually, you know, I said to Ava, my wife, I said, there will come a point where we'll be able to start taking videos out of the shop and putting them up for free for patrons. So that's the goal, is to, you know, to, because people will say, you shouldn't be selling this stuff. It's like, yeah, well, we've got to eat at some point. You should be giving it away. Patreon's really wonderful in allowing us to do that. But either way, I think you're right. It's an ongoing thing. You'll forget, you know, any video that you watch or buy, or a book you buy, try reading it again later or watching it again A number of people told me, we sit down every spring and we watch her. Once a year, we sit and watch ADD and Loving It. And they've been doing this for 7 years now. And they still get something out of it because you just do, right? If you're 11 and somebody dies, you get something out of it. But when you're 50 and somebody dies, you get probably something else out of it, out of the lesson. So you hear something different in a sermon or whatever. And that, not that they're sermons, they're more comedy routines. So yeah, so emotion, it's there and it's going to be inevitable and you're just going to deal with it. And if it wasn't there, life wouldn't be all that interesting.
That's true. They say that all the really good stuff wouldn't feel as good if you had never had a negative emotion.
Yep. That's why people who live in a third world country in poverty probably experience happiness just as much as the wealthiest person in the world, because what is happiness is ultimately limited by the amount of chemicals in your brain, the amount of serotonin and all the others. So very interesting. I had never thought of it until I read a great book called Sapiens, and he talks about that were people happier in the past? Yeah, just to say, even though life was harder, but hey, the kids didn't die this winter. Which, you know, today is like, well, of course, the boss picked them up in snowsuits and the thing. And it's like back then, imagine you didn't lose a kid this winter. That's, yep. How good does that feel? So,
well, and, you know, our environment has changed so much, but our brains really haven't changed that much.
No.
And we're living in a very different world than our ancestors. I feel like everybody has to figure out the strategies and the supports that you need.
Yeah.
And you have to look at it from a long-term view.
Yeah.
It isn't something that, you know, oh, I got this diagnosis, that answers all the questions, I'm just going to pretend like it didn't happen and never talk about it again.
Right, because that's exactly right. Because, first of all, it answers some questions, but it raises many, many more, right? It raises a ton of questions. And that's where you need to go looking. And that's ongoing because the researchers keep learning. You know, when we started out, when we made ADD and Loving It, there were things that were, a lot of things that weren't known. They'd identified a few genes, but not many, and so on. So the understanding has changed. The idea that it's probably multiple disorders and that the name doesn't really, I mean, there's already three or four subtypes depending on who you talk to. These are very different things. Anyway, yeah, so the emotions are going to come up. You're going to have to deal with them. But what you talk about there, what you just said about thinking long-term, it's hard. That's hard. That's why journaling can help. And in fact, in ADD and Mastering It, Patrick talks about the fact that for 20 years, 30 years, maybe longer, every morning he writes down what he did the day before, first thing. And to do that with your emotions or your upsets or your even your positives, to remind yourself, oh yeah, yeah, I had that great conversation with Liz. That was really great. Because we forget. We just, our horizon, our event horizon is so tight. So that's part of it. It's the biggest challenge in dealing with your ADHD is your ADHD. That's it.
Well, yeah. The inherent executive function deficits, the best laid plans.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yep.
As you can tell, Rick and I had so much fun recording, so much fun, in fact, that I forgot to thank him, but I have since thanked him via email. I hope you learned something today. I know that I did just talking to Rick. I learned a lot. Stick around. Good things are coming. And like I always say, we are stronger together.